very few people are saying, look within yourself, look within yourself. You are the hero of your story.
Welcome to Sacred Leaders with me, Sacred Tasias, leadership and embodiment coach, author, speaker, entrepreneur, humanitarian, and modern medicine woman. And you have found a podcast where today's top leaders, conscious entrepreneurs, spiritual teachers, and personal development experts share with you the insights, tools, hacks, and strategies to help you bring more depth and embodiment to your life and leadership and amplify your impact from the inside out. Today's guest is Light Watkins, who, amongst other many other things, is the author of three books, his latest being Knowing Where to Look, 108 Daily Doses of Inspiration. He's also a Vedic meditation teacher, a keynote speaker, and facilitator of sold-out retreats on meditation and happiness. I have had the pleasure of knowing Light as a friend for years, and I invited him to the podcast to share some of his wisdom with us, as well as what his new book is all about. So in this episode, we speak about finding the creativity muse, following your heart even when your mind says things do not make sense, how to live a truly aligned life, and listening to the universe's signs, as well as knowing where to look, which is not only the title of his new book, but also a deep insight we all get to remember. Keep on listening as we dive right into it. Hey, Light, thank you so much for making the time to be here in Sacred Leaders. We're finally making it happen, and I'm so excited.
I know, me too. Thanks for having me on Sacred Leaders. I'm honored.
Yeah, such a pleasure. We've been talking about this, having this conversation in the podcast for a really long time. And I remember, I think it was last time that we were having breakfast in LA, Cafe Gratitude. And you said, just wait for it. I'm going to be releasing my next book and we can have the interview then or the conversation then. Here it is.
And now it's a thing. It's like in my hands and it's you know, people are reading it. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Knowing where to look. So I want to know all things book and non-book related. But firstly, I want to give a little bit of an introduction to why I personally am so excited about this book. This is actually how you and I met. I was thinking about this earlier today, and I remembered this one time where a girl that I followed on Instagram shared this daily dose of inspiration email screenshot. And it was something really inspirational, something, a quote that really touched me. And I remember I started to follow you straight away. Then we started to talk and we became friends. So for those of you listening, Light and I have been friends now for years, and we've met in LA and when you've come to Australia, and it's been, but it all started from that one screenshot of that one newsletter email. And I started to follow your emails and get so much value from each daily dose of inspiration that you were sending. And I know that that has a big relationship to how this book came about. So I want to hear a little bit about what inspired you to create this book and what's in it. What do we get in this book?
Well, first of all, I didn't remember that that's how we connected, was through the daily dose. That's pretty remarkable. And if you know, nothing else happens with this, it was worth just being connected to you. But yeah, no, I've been sending out these daily inspirational stories for 5 years now. Yeah. It's funny because I did the math the other day and I worked out that I'm on number 1,830 something emails, never missed a day. And it started as, honestly, it started as just writing practice. I was working on my previous book, which is the book about meditation called Bliss More: How to Succeed in Meditation Without Really Trying. And that was going to be a 60,000 word book when I got the book deal. And I was very insecure about my writing ability because I had only written one other book, which is self-published. But the thing with that book is it took me 4 years to finish writing it. right? So I really took my time with it. And then with Bliss More, I only had 6 months to write the book. So I was like, okay, the first book was 20,000 words, took me 4 years. This book is 60,000 words. I only have 6 months. So I was like, holy shit. I don't know if I can do this. I may need a ghostwriter. And I was talking to my agent about this. And she said, you can write the book. You've written before. And I just thought, you know what? Okay. It definitely scares me. And it definitely, I know it's going to stretch me. But just to make sure my writing is where I want it to be for my own standard, I want to practice this. And the best way to practice anything is to do a daily exercise. And I knew that from my teaching. You know, I've been teaching yoga and meditation for 15 years. You know, you understand process and progression and repetition and all of that. So I decided to apply that same formula to the writing. And I said, you know, I'm going to send it out every morning, 6 a.m. Pacific time in LA time. And I'm going to make it public so that I can't mail in the message. I have to actually think about this, because if I say something or write something that is inappropriate or offensive, people are going to let me know. So I have to put time and thought into this. And so that is what became the Daily Dose of Inspiration. I had no idea what I was necessarily going to write about. Probably had a couple dozen stories. When I first had the idea, I was convinced I was going to run out of stuff to write about after 2 or 3 weeks. Sure enough, 3 weeks in, run out of content. Nothing. No, I've told all the stories that I know. And something really interesting started happening. I would be sitting around on my couch at midnight, pulling my hair out, and already am bald, trying to think of something to write that will go out the next morning, and nothing would come. And then I would just close my eyes for a few minutes and just drift off into this sort of meditative state, which I always like to include because I don't want people to separate what I've been doing from what I've been being. You know, like I have had this daily meditation practice going like clockwork in the background for the last few decades, couple decades. And I started to feel these ideas coming through me. And it was almost like I was transcribing them. And that became the basis of most of the doses of inspiration after those first few weeks. Was every now and again, I would like come across a conversation somewhere or read something that would inspire me. But more often than not, something would come through me. And it's kind of like what Elizabeth Gilbert, the author of Big Magic and Eat, Pray, Love, says about the muse, right? If you show up to the blank page consistently enough, the muse will feed you the content, and all you have to do is dictate it. So that was my experience, and that it didn't make it necessarily easier, but allowed me to trust the process more and more. And so here we are 5 years later, and it's still happening.
I love that. And I love the story, because so many times it's easier to get caught up in what we're up to right now and thinking that this might not be as productive or successful as we want it to be. And I was just having a conversation with one of our common friends, actually, Satya, before this call. And we were talking about the fact that so many times we might be working on something that at the time we can't understand how big of a deal it will be, right? But every single step of the way is leading up to that. And I think you know this about me, the majority of my creations, of my programs, my podcasts, everything to me comes in that space of inspiration. For me, it's not so much sitting in front of a notebook or something, but for me, it's walking on the beach or going into nature or sometimes even getting a massage. Like when I feel like creativity and inspiration isn't coming, that's what gets to happen. I get to remove myself and go do the things that find or that bring me that bliss and that state of connection to myself, connection to something greater, if you will, and create that space. So I'm curious to know, how do you create this space for the muse to come? What are the practices or the ways in which you connect with that muse?
You know, it's not really that sexy, but I just feel like showing up, just keeping, I feel like consistency is the most effective way to get that muse to show up. And it's not, you know, when you're taking on a new project, a new creative project, obviously there are going to be doubts, there's uncertainty with everything, right? And we can focus on that, or we can channel our energy into, okay, how can I be most consistent with this? Like, what do I need to restructure or rearrange in my lifestyle in order to just show up? And instead of looking at this as a 12 or 20 step process where I'm hoping to get lucky and have a breakthrough in one of those steps, I'm going to look at it from the very beginning as a 1,000-step process. And the breakthrough is going to happen at some point between step 600 and 1,000. I don't know which one, so I have to treat each one exactly the same and show up to it. So I think one of the issues that we can have, and I've been the victim of this, is we underappreciate how much consistency we actually need in order to have the breakthrough or to embody and integrate an experience into our life. And number two, we don't see it as a process. We see it as an outcome. We're always focusing on the outcome. You know, when is the thing going to happen? When is the payoff going to occur? If I don't see the payoff in the horizon, then I'm wasting my time. And we have to understand that the process is the payoff, because what you're doing is you're building the muscle of committing yourself to anything, any process. And if you can do it with your writing or your exercising or your diet or the way you relate to your partner, then you can turn around and apply that same mindset to anything else. And you become that person who doesn't wait until New Year's Eve to think about what you want to do to change your life. If you have an epiphany of what you can do to improve your life or optimize some experience you're having on July the 15th, then you start July 15th, because you know it's a process. And if you start then by New Year's, by January 1st, you'll be in stride. You're already going to have, you will have implemented that change instead of, you know, being in the sort of collective struggle of trying with everybody else to make this thing happen, but then getting distracted by all these other things and these stories and these tales of it's too hard. And, you know, there's the collective consciousness around that time of year is so thick, and the marketing is so heavy that everybody's trying to like get your dollars to get you to change this and change that. And it could be a little bit overwhelming. So I say the best time to listen to that inspiration and move in the direction of change is when nobody's paying attention, because then you can work out the kinks and you can create the lifestyle and you can get the habit fully formed by the time everybody else starts struggling out of the gate.
Yes, and it comes back to the intention, right? Because, and I see this as one of our biggest issues as a society right now, is that we live in this really disposable society and this instant gratification world where we're just looking for the outcome and we are focusing so much externally. So if the intention is the outcome so many times doesn't arrive because we focus on the outcome instead of focusing in the process. And to me personally, what I have learned in life is that it's always about the process. I'm not doing any of what I do for anybody else. And yes, the ego can forget sometimes and go into a little trip or wanting to be seen as this or that or have this or that. But at the end of the day, what's the intention behind everything? I see this as the creative process of creating the book was the gift to yourself, was the gift, the lesson, the medicine that you received as a human being, you and your own process of evolution and growth. Then the book is almost like the graduation where you're like, look at what I did after all these years of the process, right? But if we're just focusing in the graduation and we don't even know what we're being initiated in or enrolling to, then we're missing the point. And it's pretty hard to get to the outcome if we're not honoring the process itself. Surely we can make some money and have some success, but at the end of the day, what's your intention? Do you want some depth in your life? Do you want some growth? Do you want happiness? Do you want joy? Do you want fulfillment? I find that we can only really get those things when we are devoted and surrendered to the process. So I love that. And one thing came up as you were sharing, this thought of, I wonder if light back in the day, the men that started teaching meditation and yoga saw himself as a multiple books author that was going to be writing books and telling all these stories and jumping in all these podcasts and creating his own podcast and all of that. And I know that in the type of meditation that we both practice, there's this idea of following the charm. And I wonder how this relates to this transition that you went through from running all of these retreats, meditation trainings and all of that, which I imagine you may still do to some degree, but really focusing so much and writing books and sharing your stories and teaching in this different way.
Yeah, that's a good question. And, you know, when I think back to my life, when I first graduated college, I had been majoring in advertising and I got a job in the creative department of a boutique ad agency, which was like a dream job. And that's all I wanted to do. And I did it. And after about 3 months, I realized that that was not as fulfilling as I thought it was going to be in order to stay in it for, you know, indefinitely. And I started having these thoughts of getting into modeling. And I didn't know how that worked. Like, I kind of nominated myself as a model. I didn't know that that's not how it goes. So usually someone discovers you and they invite you into that industry. You don't discover yourself and say, hey, I'm ready for, you know, for whoever needs me. But that's what I did.
The meditator in you was already creeping in, discovering yourself.
So I did that. And when I did that, I never missed advertising for 1 second. And I ended up modeling for about 6 or 7 years. I was never like a supermodel, but I did pretty well at one point. And then after a while, I realized, okay, this is not really fulfilling anymore. It was at one point, but now I'm starting to have that itch again. And I recognize it as the same itch I had at the ad agency after 3 months. And I was already getting exposed to yoga. And so I knew that there was a moment where I knew I wanted to become a yoga teacher. And I moved to Los Angeles and I became a yoga teacher and I was very good at it. And I started having these huge classes and I thought, okay, I'm going to be a yoga teacher indefinitely. And then when I met my meditation teacher, I knew instantly, okay, I'm meant to teach meditation. So the point is, I don't think we truly, if we're living in the moment and we're listening to whatever our heart is telling us and our inner guidance, I don't think it's possible to know what you want to do for the rest of your life. I don't think that hasn't been my experience. But the danger in following your heart is we sometimes think that if I'm following my heart with this thing, then this thing is supposed to be it. And if I start losing the desire or I feel like it's not as fulfilling, then there may be something wrong with me and maybe I need to double down and be more consistent with it. So that's where the consistency thing gets a little bit foggy, because there are some points where you may feel that this is no longer resonating with you in the same way that it was before. And so, but there's a lot of shame around this idea of quitting, you know? So I write about this and I've talked about how there's nothing wrong with quitting if what you're leaping towards is something that is more, that feels more aligned with who you are in this moment and how you've grown and evolved versus quitting because it's hard, right? So those are two basic reasons that we want to quit, because it's hard or because something is stretching us and we may not want to be stretched in that way. And so if it's hard, then that is not an empowering reason to quit, because the next thing you do, once you get it to a certain level, it's going to be hard as well. And if you're not used to navigating hardship, then it's always going to defeat you until it doesn't. So you may as well get it out of the way now. But if it's something that stretches you and it's taking you to the edge of your comfort zone, and now you have to take the leap to the next thing that's going to take you to the next stage, that's a great reason to transition or to graduate yourself, I call it, from this earlier thing to the new thing. And so that has been my experience. I've fully enjoyed everything that I've done in my life, and I have not hesitated to graduate myself from one thing to another thing as I continue evolving as a person and listening to my inner guidance. And again, that's the principle. The principle is not how long can you hold into something, but to what extent can you listen to your inner guidance and act upon it?
Yeah, absolutely. And personally, I feel like I am in one of those moments right now. I am in this graduation, and I know that this happens so many times over our lifetimes if we're truly listening, if we're truly open to that. But I wonder how does that feel like, or how do you recognize when you're in one of those moments of graduation, when you're in one of those moments where you're going from one thing to the next, and what has supported you to listen to that inner guidance and to trust?
Well, here's the thing. You don't want to wait until that point to start listening to your inner guidance, because it's going to be very confusing.
Fair enough.
And you're not going to be able to distinguish, hey, is this my inner guidance or am I just afraid? So I tell people to start practicing now with the little things, right? When I say little things, I literally mean little things. Like if you are in a space and somebody there has on shoes that you admire, go up to them and compliment them. That's a leap of faith, right? You're putting yourself out there. They may reject you. They may ignore you. They may think you're weird. So in order to do that, you have to have some sort of faith that everything is happening for you and not to you. And so that qualifies that as a leap of faith. Or if you're going out for a walk and something inside of you says turn left, but you had every intention of turning right, turn left and just see what happens. Or if something inside of you says to, you know, order the strawberry shortcake instead of the chocolate cheesecake. Hold on, there's an ambulance passing by. Then just listen to that inner guidance that tells you to do whatever. And sometimes you're going to get it wrong. Sometimes, you know, you're going to be listening to the fear voice and you're going to see how the situation turned out. Usually when you listen to your inner guidance, it turns out in a way that empowers you. It makes you feel more expansive. If you listen to your fear voice, it's going to make you contract and you're going to feel more victimized. So you'll start to discern between those two feelings. And as you continue split testing it, you'll start to see, oh, this is my voice of inner guidance and that's my fear voice. And both of the voices are in there, you know, trying to get you to do what they want, do their bidding. And we're used to listening more to the fear voice because it's louder and you know, society supports the fear voice more than the voice telling you to take the leap of faith. But you want to get to the point where that voice actually is the dominant voice. And the fear voice is not going to go away. But if the guided inner guidance voice is dominant, then you'll be able to distinguish it a lot easier and take action on it. So yeah, ultimately, you don't want to have to be thinking about this in the heat of the moment when the opportunity is presented to you, because you may only have a split second to act. And if you hesitate, then you may miss that opportunity. And it doesn't mean your life is ruined or your life is over or anything like that. It just means that things may be a little bit more challenging for a period of time until another opportunity comes around. But when you realize that by following your inner guidance, you're literally operating in conjunction with those divine opportunities or the divine timing, that's that flow state that everybody wants. But it's not for the faint at heart, because, you know, I tell people following your purpose and, you know, following your heart is not going to lead you to a place where you are more comfortable. It's always going to stretch you. It's always going to cause you to grow and expand into it, into this bigger version of yourself. So be careful about thinking, oh, I want to follow my heart. I want to be, you know, in sync with my inner guidance, because it's going to have you looking crazy for a period of time to your friends and your family. And they're going to be telling you, you're going too far. You've lost your mind. Are you nuts? What are you thinking? Like, that's the beginning stages. And in a way, it's a rite of passage. Moving through that will get you into your growth zone. And that's what most people end up getting turned around with, is they can't tolerate that level of resistance and rejection.
Yes, and it's so important. I can't really think of one single person that I know that is truly fulfilled, truly living a life of purpose, truly doing exactly what they love and doing it with success, living an abundant, beautiful life, that isn't committed to following the heart and the voice of the heart. So it's a payoff. You have to either commit to that or commit to, you know, living a very different life. Mm-hmm. But in saying that, I know that for a lot of people, there's this, how to say, there's like a glorification or this idea that I see many people have that if I do it for some time, then it'll get easier and the insecurities or the self-doubt or the fears will disappear. And I see this with a lot of my clients, successful coaches that have been in the personal development industry for years, they're doing the work, and they come to me with these stories of like, I know better than this, and I should know better, and I should be over this. And to me, it's always really fascinating the fact that we think that these aspects of ourselves, we can play the perfectionist around them and just get rid of them, right? So I love having conversations with people like you that say, hey, I've been meditating for 20 years, 2 decades, and I still hear that voice sometimes. It is still there because I know that we tend to want to perfect ourselves so much and get rid of everything that's uncomfortable and just stick to what feels good and what feels honorable and lovable and likable and the things that we just want to go out there and share. And we tend to neglect and really shame the aspects of ourselves that do experience fear and do experience doubt. And if we do want to live a life, like you were saying, that is fully aligned with what our heart wants, we will continuously be at our edge, which means that we will experience fear or insecurity or self-doubt at some points. They may not run our lives, they may not take up as much space, but they're still there. And I haven't met anyone that isn't there. I've heard of one teacher, of my spiritual teacher, that seems to be like actually enlightened and has no longer thoughts. But other than that, I haven't personally met anybody that doesn't have that voice inside. And I know this gets in the way for a lot of people in the creative process, thinking that I'll just get to the point where I never have fear or I never have doubt, and then I'll get started. What has been your experience through meditating for so long, doing the work for 2 decades? Do you still find yourself experiencing those voices? And if so, how do you move past them so that you can still put the book out there and you can still go and teach and follow your heart each day?
Yes, they're still there. And you just have a slightly easier time navigating those voices. You know, this reminds me of something that author Schopenhauer, the philosopher, said once. He said, happiness is very difficult to find within, but it's impossible to find anywhere else. So you're looking at the difference between impossible and difficult. And to me, yes, impossible is way more difficult than difficult. So unfortunately, most people don't get to the point where they can appreciate that philosophy until they get really old and they've already turned over all the rocks in their life and they've seen, okay, I've acquired all the things, I have kids, I found what I thought was my soulmate, I have had a wonderful job, I've made all the money, and yet I'm still feeling unfulfilled inside. And so that's what really changes, right? With time and practice, you can become more and more fulfilled. Now, fulfillment doesn't mean you have a perfect life. Fulfillment means your life is still as imperfect as anyone else's life, which means most things don't go your way on a day-to-day basis. But because you have cultivated a state of fulfillment within, you have an easier time adapting to the things that are not going your way, which the payoff to that is it keeps you present and it keeps you grateful. And it allows you to see the silver lining in almost any situation. So you become more optimistic. And when you're present and grateful and optimistic, you can spot more opportunities to do the things that you're here to do in any given moment than if you were worried and anxious and depressed and, you know, looking for the outcome, looking for the next thing, or searching for happiness outside of yourself. So again, some people will hear this and they'll think this guy isn't what he's talking about. I'm still going to try to make my $1 million. And look, I'm not anti-money. I'm not anti-achievement. I'm for all of that. I make money and, you know, I like nice things and nice places. I just think that we need to take the same energy that we apply to becoming materially successful and devote that same energy to boosting up our internal fulfillment. And I think you'll find the quality of your life will significantly improve, even though you may have a bunch of stuff or you may have nothing, right? But inside, that's where you're going to source your greatest sense of yourself, your greatest level of authenticity, and your greatest happiness.
Yeah, absolutely. And this reminds me of the title of your book, Knowing Where to Look. I don't know if it's related. I want to hear it from you, but knowing where to look, it's inside. That's where we get to look. So tell me a little bit more about the title and what's in the book. What will people get from reading this book?
Sure. Knowing Where to Look refers to, well, the subtitle is also important. It's 108 Daily Doses of Inspiration. So most of these, if not all of these doses of inspiration, are different messages, all kind of saying the same thing, which is your happiness is within. And all of the instructions about what to do next are happening within. And most times we're focused externally on what to do next. We're looking at what the economy is doing. We're looking at what this person's opinion is. We're looking at where we're getting approval from that group or that person. And the book is saying 108 ways, go within and find the answer. And so they're just these really short stories. They take about a minute, maybe half a minute to read. And can I give you an example of one? Just a really short one. Okay. So I just flipped the book open and it's meant to be flipped open and whatever catches your eye, because there's a lot of text designs and illustrations in here as well. Whatever catches your eye, just start with that. So this one is called The Real Reason. And it says, when people start asking why a past relationship or former job did not work out, it's not really a fair question, because we're then expected to compress months or years worth of life experience and expectations and miscommunications and false assumptions and sincere intentions into a couple of sentences. And the sensational reason we often give is rarely the real reason. That is to say, it's not the underlying reason that most things in life come to an end. It's also not as interesting to share the real reason, because it's practically the same reason we left middle school and high school and perhaps college. We learned what we came to learn. Our studies were complete, and it was time to move on. So that dose is written from a spiritual perspective, right? And most of the doses in here are written from that perspective. And so there's a couple of different ways to interpret anything. We can interpret it from the ground level perspective of what happened at 2 o'clock and then what went down at 2:15 and then at 2:30, or we can pull the lens back and we can see how that incident is connected to what happened yesterday, last year, and tomorrow, and 2 years from now. And that gives us a greater sense of perspective. And we may even see, oh, my actions yesterday actually caused this drama that occurred today. So this drama is not isolated. My unhappiness is not isolated, because it is the result of the choices I did or did not make yesterday, last week, last year, 5 years ago. So saying knowing where to look is a way of just kind of pulling the lens back and seeing those connections and using very simple stories just like that as prompts and showing you, okay, well, have you considered this aspect of a similar situation that you may be going through?
Mm-hmm. I love that. And one of our friends in common has a book, and she mentioned that it was a little bit similar to her in her experience to one of the Ramdas books that you just open and flip a page. And I was like, oh, that's a really, really great one to relate to, right? So I love those because I see it as one of those books that you can use even for your practice. Like we were saying before, the daily commitment to making space for the muse. And it can be that moment where we open space for the inspiration, and not necessarily does it always need to come from going into, like we were saying, going for a walk or being in silence, but sometimes having a resource, a tool like this that we can flip through and get the exact right message that we need at the exact right time can be so supportive as well. I love this type of books because I feel also like there's some magic to them. Like you always open the exact page you need to open. Have you found that? Like every single time you open the book, it's exactly what you were meant to be reading. And
it was fun designing the book in that way because it got to a point where I was trying to figure out which stories to include. And I created this whole algorithm so that we space the different categories of stories out evenly. So literally, no matter where you open, there's a great chance of you getting a completely different story than the one you had read previously, no matter where you open the book. So it took a lot more thought and care than I think people probably realize or would even appreciate.
Yeah, that's amazing. So when someone, I know I want the book and I remember telling you like, well, I want the book, but I want you to sign it. So I'm going to get you to sign it next time I see you. But when people get this book and get their hands on it, what do you think the purpose, the intention, the medicine that this book will bring to their lives, to their daily intention, can be or gets to be?
I think it's a great thing to have next to you wherever you meditate. You know, sometimes if you come out of meditation and you're feeling like you're feeling a bit open and you're feeling more expansive to dive into the book then and just kind of get a little shift in whatever situation. Because, you know, every day we're dealing with something. Everyone's dealing with something. It could be a financial thing. It could be a familial thing. It could be a relational thing, personal development thing, right? We're dealing with something. We're confronting something or confronted with something. And so we have to make a decision. And not making a decision is a decision. And sometimes that's not the best decision. So in order to make the thousands of decisions that we need to make on a weekly basis, we need as much information as possible. And most of the information in the world, again, is pointing us externally. Like look in your bank account and figure out if that's the answer, or look in your, you know, someone else's bank account and figure out if that's the answer. Maybe you need to take money from them or. And very few people are saying, look within yourself, look within yourself. You are the hero of your story. And if the answer lies, if the problem is rooted within you and your experience, if you own your experience, then the answer is also found right where you are. And you can change the circumstance at any moment. And there's a piece in here that I think perfectly illustrates this. It's called The Wrong Note. It's another short piece. Do you mind if I read it really quickly?
For sure. Go ahead.
Okay. Pianist Herbie Hancock spent 5 years as Miles Davis's protege. During their first performance together, they were in the moment, playing off each other, improvising. Then Hancock accidentally hit a wrong chord. It was amazing, Hancock recalled. Miles is getting to the peak of his solo, and then I played this chord that was so wrong. It was so wrong. I thought I had just like we had built this house of cards, and I just destroyed them all. And Miles just took a breath, and then he played some notes that made my chord right. Hancock said that he couldn't figure out how, but Miles somehow fixed his wrong note. And he said, it took me years to realize that Miles didn't judge my chord. I did. And then later, Miles Davis explained, it's not the note that you play that's the wrong note. It's the note you play afterward that makes it right or wrong. So again, this is just another reminder about where we're looking. Are we focused on the thing we did that's supposedly wrong, or are we focused on what we do next that could potentially make that mistake right and maybe even mm-hmm. make the situation better because we made the mistake and it exposed something we were trying to hide. And now we get an opportunity to really just let the truth out and be completely authentic and honest in a way that we would not have been if we were still hiding. And you know, I think we just need as many reminders as we can get, all of us, myself included, to continually look within, to be more authentic, to be more present, to be more grateful, to be more patient, to have more space, to be more adaptable, to be more empathetic and compassionate and generous, and all the things that we read about in the positive thought quotes on Instagram, and we nod our head and we double tap it, but very few of us are able to actually embody those things. And we need to embody them in order to truly benefit from them.
Absolutely. And this is the biggest thing. I feel personally the biggest thing that we can learn, that everything starts and ends within. And if we get this one right, everything else just makes sense. Everything else, we can respond to life with a lot more grace. We can respond to challenges with a lot more trust, a lot more surrender, really get the lesson, see the triggers for what they are, which is medicine, it's lessons, versus getting caught up in the trigger. There is so much to this understanding and this embodiment of the knowing that everything starts within, that everything is about us and our relationship within us, with us, and in relationship to everything else, starting within once again. So I love this. And another thing that I really, really like about the concept of this book and how it works is that, you know, we do need those reminders, as many as possible, because we have so many distractions. Even the ones of us that have the meditation practice, or the people that do the yoga, or people that have those morning routines, so easy to actually do the practice in the morning, but then go about your day and forget everything that the practice was about, right? I know a lot of people that have the perfect morning practice, like wake up in the morning, hot water with the lemon and the apple cider vinegar, and then the meditation, and then this and then that. But then as soon as they jump in the cars and they get in traffic, they're completely forgot about everything they just did the whole morning. So we could use as many reminders as we possibly can find for this truth, that is that everything starts within and that we get to look within. And what I have found as well is that oftentimes it lands more deeply when we are the ones finding out the lesson than when somebody else is telling us. So I feel like opening up the book and getting the perfect lesson, the perfect message for your day, lands in a deeper way than if you open Instagram and somebody's telling you in a video or something like that. Because in a way, you feel more involved. You feel like you found that message. You took the action of opening the book, well, buying the book, getting the book, having the book visible, opening the book. You created that opportunity for the message versus having somebody tell you how it is. That the majority of us have a little bit of an inner rebel within, and we want to be involved. We want to be the person that finds the lesson, that understands the thing. It doesn't land as much if it isn't in that way. So I love this. And I would really love to know, like, out of all of the stories that you have included in there, out of all of the teachings that are mixed and put in this creation, in this book, what is one that has a special meaning to you, something that was a big lesson for you to really get to embody or learn as you were writing the book and putting it together? Is there any that stands out?
You know, that's what's unique about this work is, as I mentioned before, I have thousands of these stories and I could only include 108. So one of the standards for curating which ones to include is this has to be meaningful to me personally. Mm-hmm. Like it has to be something that moves me even still when I reread the story. And I would say that all of them to some extent do that. It's hard to say which one it resonates the most, because a lot of them, most of them are personal stories, but there is one story, the one that I end the book on, I think it's very poignant, and it's something that that I remind myself of every day. And it tells a story of walking through New York City, Union Square. Are you familiar with Union Square in New York?
Yes, I haven't been to New York, but yes.
So there's a Barnes and Noble. Anyone who's been through Union Square knows the Barnes and Noble in Union Square. And I was walking through there one night. I was teaching meditation in town and heading back to my apartment that I was staying in. And it was late. I just had dinner. And it was probably, I don't know, 10:45 at night or something like that. And Barnes and Noble stays open pretty late, but it closes around 11 o'clock. So I'm walking through Union Square and I get this internal message, this calling to go into Barnes and Noble and get a Rubik's Cube. I didn't know where it came from, right? It was just a message. I tried not to question it, even though my intellect was like, oh, it's late. And I definitely don't have time to be playing with a Rubik's Cube. But then there was this curious part of me, which is my inner voice. And I know that the quality of that voice. And it said, no, go get the Rubik's Cube. So I went and got the Rubik's Cube. I had the last Rubik's Cube that they had just before they closed. And I go back to my apartment and I go online and I search, how do you solve a Rubik's Cube? And little did I know, there's an algorithm for solving a Rubik's Cube. I didn't know this. I thought people were just like geniuses who could figure this out. But all you do is you follow the steps. It's like a 100-step process to solving a Rubik's Cube, and you memorize this process. So I did this over the next week. I intentionally practiced solving the Rubik's Cube. And sure enough, after about a week, I was able to solve the Rubik's Cube. So then I was on the New York subway solving the Rubik's Cube, and people were like spellbound, like looking at somebody. Everyone thinks you're a genius if they see you solving the Rubik's Cube. And I was able to do it faster and faster. And then something occurred to me. The way you solve a Rubik's Cube is very similar to the way meditation works, in that Rubik's Cube has obviously six sides, and then there's three rows and three columns on each side. And the way you solve it is you solve it from the bottom row on each side, and you work your way up to the second row on each side, and then you go to the top row on each side, and then there's a few more moves, and then the whole thing gets solved. And so basically it's, you do the foundation and then you build upon the foundation. And I was like, wow, this is really interesting, because meditation also works this way. The foundation is rest. Once you restore rest, then everything else that you want from meditation, happiness, perspective, digestion, reproduction, all those other systems start moving back into balance. And I was like, I should do a video about this, explaining how meditation works using a Rubik's Cube. And so I did a video, and that ended up being my first viral video. And so many people came to learn how to meditate because they saw that video. So I inadvertently ended up getting more business teaching meditation and exposing people to the practice of meditation because I followed the charm, as you called it, in doing this thing that didn't make any sense intellectually. And again, that's the hallmark. That's the telltale sign of following your heart. It's not going to make intellectual sense. And you can easily talk yourself out of it. And my friends told me, what are you doing? You're wasting your time. You're a grown man playing with a Rubik's Cube. But I had to overcome all of that resistance and still just keep taking the next step and the next step. And then 20 steps in or 50 steps in, I get the idea to make the video. But if I hadn't taken those first 20 to 25 steps, I would not have been privy to the ultimate idea, which is, okay, now combine this with your area of expertise, and you're going to help a lot of people that way, right? So that's essentially the blueprint for following your heart. It starts off with a crazy idea. You're not going to want to do it. Your intellect is going to try to talk you out of it. You're going to hit up with resistance, but at the same time, it's going to cause you to stretch and grow in some interesting way that empowers you, where you're going to see a pattern that you didn't see before. Then an idea is going to occur to you to combine that with some other unique skill or talent that you have in a way that helps people. And that you can apply that to any body's path of following their heart. And I guarantee you it will match up. It will sync up like a carbon copy.
I love that. Love that story. And I am going to be looking for that video. I haven't seen it, but I love that.
Just search Rubik's Cube meditation and you'll see it.
Okay, amazing. I will. And you know what just occurred to me is this fun realization that the way in which we met through first online was due to you following your heart with this daily dose of inspiration in this way. The way in which we met in person in LA was due to one of those moments for me where I got this intuition of you get to go to LA. And at the time I was completely broke. I was like, I had like $50 in my bank account. And I remember going like, what am I going to do in LA? I don't know anyone in LA. What am I going to do? I've never been, I had been once years ago to LA. Anyways, I followed through and the money came and then opportunities came. I ended up in LA and that's where we met. And then you introduced me to our common friends, Preston and Alexi. And that opened up a whole new world for me as well. So yeah, it's those crazy moments when nothing makes sense, when rationally, intellectually, there's no reason why we would do that. Having that faith and having that courage can create so much. So I'm super grateful and happy that our crazy, creative, heart-following moments got us to this point, both individually and in our friendship. And there's two more questions I want to ask you before we finish. The first one being, where can people find you? In what ways can people work with you? Where can they get your book?
So the books will be available in Australia in August. I think that's the launch date in Australia. Otherwise, I would say anywhere books are sold. And the hub for all of my offerings is lightwatkins.com. And I'm excited because I just launched my new online community. It's called the Happiness Insiders. And it's a way for people to learn very practical, accessible inner practices for cultivating happiness and fulfillment within, as well as to get support and accountability from me and my team, and for us to build community around that. Because a lot of times when you are committed to your meditation practice or your gratitude practice, it's like you're a lone wolf out there. You know, your friends all think you're weird and crazy. And so it can be a bit of a lonely journey. And if you know other people who are in your area who are doing this, then it makes it a little bit easier. So this community is just a way for us to find one another out in the world, out in the wilderness. And that way we can connect, we can organize, you know, meetups and analog experiences in addition to connecting digitally. So I'm excited about that. And the book is available everywhere books are sold. And you can obviously follow me on social media at Light Watkins as well.
Amazing. For those people listening in Australia, can we get it on anywhere online and get it sent to Australia?
After the launch date, you can. Apparently, they won't let you, Amazon won't ship anything until it launches in August.
Okay,
and I would suggest not getting the Kindle, the electronic version, because apparently the word on the street is that it's hard to experience it in the way that it was designed. It's designed, it's very illustration heavy. And with Kindle, you have to increase the font size and it just doesn't work with the format. So I would skip that and just wait for the hard copy, or the audio version is really cool because I actually included some commentary and backstories to some of the pieces. So I would suggest that. And that doesn't come out till August either.
Amazing. Okay. So we're going to wait for August, but for all of you listening in the US and all the other parts, you can get it already. Amazing. And the last question, last but not least, is in your opinion, what makes a leader sacred?
Someone who is in it to serve, someone who's in it to serve. You know, there are a lot of leaders who are in it for the ego trip of being recognized as the leader. And I like people who lead from the back, people who are leading by example and who are in it for the service of it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I agree. Thank you so much. Thank you, Light, for the work that you do, for everything that you are and put out there in the world. I'm excited to get my hands on the book. And yeah, excited to share this episode with my community as well. So thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate you.
I hope you enjoyed this episode and found something valuable that you can apply to your own life and leadership. And I wanted to let you know that I am opening up a couple of spaces for private initiations. These are private coaching containers for women that want to radically transform their life and leadership through doing the deep embodiment inner work. This is for the woman that is ready to be initiated into a whole new level of embodiment of her truth and her mission, ready to meet herself more deeply and authentically than ever and bring more depth to her legacy as a leader and entrepreneur. This is about amplifying your impact from the inside out. And if you want to learn more, go ahead and check the link in the show notes to apply for one of the spaces or direct message me on Instagram with the word initiation, and I will personally share more details with you. Thank you again for taking the time of your day to listen to this episode, and I will connect with you in the next one.